We've got more open lines for you here on Coast to Coast, so get ready, and we'll get to you on hold, too, when we come right back. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Let us go. By the way, at the end of the program tonight, we'll be talking with a ghost hunter. That's getting to be October. You know what that means. Let's go to the phones. Marie in Bay City, Michigan, east of the Rockies. Hi, Marie.
Hi, George.
Hi there. How are you?
Oh, my God, I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
What can't you believe?
I got through. I can't believe I got through. Oh, George, I need your help on something. I am so freaking out.
What's the matter?
I had some money stolen from a Walmart store in June, and I've been trying to work on it, and I don't know. I just can't figure out where it would have gone.
Now, what do you mean stolen, though? What happened?
I was in Walmart, and there was a customer and one of those amigos, and I was trying to find the service desk.
Okay.
And he said, do you know, he said, where do you need to go? I said, well, I need to go to the service desk. I got to do some shopping, and he lives in a group home and everything. Anyway, so he says, well, I'll help you shop. And I said, well, I don't want to take your shopping thing away from you. And he says, no, he said, that's okay. So I had a Walmart blue bag, you know, I didn't have a purse with me because, well, at the time I didn't have any money for one, but I've got one now. But I set my bag in the basket and held on to the bag. And we were going along, going to five departments. And when we got to housewares, I had a cereal bowl that I wanted to get a smaller bowl. But Walmart's got them, but they're, you know, not as small as mine. So I said to the guy, I says, can you, you know, just give the bowl to the houseware guy? So he did. And when the houseware guy gave it back to me, at the time he was going through my bag and I didn't know it.
Who was this customer, other guy? Okay.
The customer was going through the bag and I didn't know it. So anyway, I put the bowl back in the bag, didn't look to see if my wallet was in there till we got to the electronics department, and I paid for my roast, and I was going to pay for my DVD, and my wallet was gone. And
so
they called.
No.
Yeah. He took $203.
And the wallet.
Yeah.
He's got your driver's license? Do you drive?
No, I'm visually handicapped. But,
okay.
My ID wasn't in there. All I had was my bus pass and my $203. So the bus pass was like $10, and then I had $203 in pin money.
When did this happen, Marie?
June 7th.
A couple days after my birthday, as a matter of fact. So he pilfers this. He takes your wallet. He's got your money. And he's gone now, right?
Well, I know who it is.
Oh, you know who it is?
Yes. But the police aren't doing anything about it, because in the report, it said that the witness, and I know who the witness is, too, he said that he observed him taking, you know, the money, but he didn't do anything to stop him. And I didn't know he was doing it until I got up to the electronics department and was going to pay for my DVD. And it's, you know, he didn't take my checkbook. He didn't take my little folder with my cards in it.
Well, maybe the guy thought he was like your son or somebody like that, and that he had permission to do that.
Well, I don't know, but I didn't know him until I got the, you know, police report and everything. So I don't know if you can figure out.
I mean, do you know where he lives and stuff like that?
Oh, I sure do.
Oh,
I called them too, and they're protecting him.
Who's protecting him?
The group home.
Oh, they are. How old is he?
I don't know how old he is. I think he's, you know, kind of young. I don't mean a teenager, but I mean, you know, but he lives in a group home, and they, you know, they said they're not allowed to say
who they are,
you know, anything.
And now you're out $200 too.
That's right.
So can you last? When's your next check show up?
Thursday.
Can you hold on for a couple days?
Yes.
All right, that's the important next thing. What's your lesson that you learned here?
Don't get me started, George.
always keep your bag with you.
Oh, I did, but you know, the thing is, I could say a lot of things about him that would not be able to be on the radio.
Well, I understand. And it's disappointing you can't trust somebody.
Yeah. You know, he seemed nice. You know, we went through all the departments. We went through grocery, bakery, toys, electronics, and then we got to housewares. And it would seem like there would be cameras everywhere, even in housewares.
Think of this one thing, Marie. Maybe he needs it more than you do.
No, because I asked the group home and they said that he didn't take it. Well, I know he did, because it would either be him or the houseware guy, but I don't think it's the houseware guy because he was the witness and he said that he observed, you know, but you know, when you're on a fixed income, George, you're the only, you know, that person is the only one that needs it. I mean, he shouldn't be taking money like that,
no,
you know.
Of course not. But you know what? What goes around comes around, Marie. It'll catch up with him eventually. Trust me. Let's go to Mike in Pueblo, Colorado. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Hey, George, good evening. It's Mike calling on behalf of the millennials coast to coast.
Very good. Representing the millennials.
Yeah. So what's that?
Well, you're representing all the millennials tonight.
I try to, and I try to turn them on to Coast, and, you know, people say, well, why should millennials care about Coast? Because you look at the topics that Coast covers. I mean, you'll have 9/11, Area 51, you'll have Daniel Brinkley on. I mean, these are essential topics for millennials, and they just don't realize it because they're too consumed with Xbox and all this.
Yeah, no, you're right.
I play Xbox, but I have Coast on in the background.
How many millennials even own radios?
Well, it's more popular than you think. The Coast to Coast AM Reddit, which I am a big part of.
Good, okay.
There's tons of millennials that talk about the shows on there and discuss them in depth. So,
all right. Well, you'll be our ambassador.
Well, yeah. No, I'm serious, George. I really care about the show.
No, I know you do. I know you do. You've been a great listener for us.
Yeah. So I did want to have a question for you tonight. I was talking to Tom, and he said it was a really good question. So
all right,
let me get to it. All right. So RFK Stadium in Washington, D.C., they recently just announced it's going to be demolished. I'm sure you're familiar with RFK Stadium.
It's been there for a zillion years, for crying out loud.
Yeah, right. And it's a very haunted stadium. What do you think happens, George, when stadiums of that nature, so much history there, get demolished? Do the spirits there realize it and take that as an opportunity to move on? Or I just want to get your opinion on that.
Okay, I don't think they move on. I think they stay probably in the new facility. I know they knocked Busch Stadium down in St. Louis a couple years ago. The two old ballparks are still around. That's Fenway Park in Boston and Wrigley Field in Chicago. And, you know, that's old-time baseball, and they're still there. But I think with the newer stadiums that come in, if they're haunted or if there's something there, I think those spirits will hang around there and do that. Here's our final text and tweet for the night. Thomas, what do you have for us?
This one from Charity in Honolulu.
And then I have a question to ask you about stadiums, because you know a lot about L.A.
Oh, I do? Okay. So this one simply says, I want to know if death fascinates you.
Fascinates me?
That's all it says.
No. No. It does it intrigue me? Not sure. I mean, but...
I'll bet she meant intrigue.
Intrigue? Maybe more intrigued, because we really don't know what's on the other side.
It's the greatest subject ever.
You know, it is. It truly is. It's what we live for and die for.
Yeah, that's true.
I've always told people, and years ago, they said, do you believe in the afterlife? I said, yeah, I do. But let me tell you, if I'm wrong and it doesn't exist and you die, don't worry about it.
Yep, that's true.
And if it does exist, you're going to know about it.
Well, it's so interesting, all the guests we have that give us takes, because, you know, they've had these near-death experiences. But what's really interesting is they're similar.
That's right. Let me ask you a question, a hockey question. The L.A. Kings play where here?
Staples Center.
How long have they done that? Years?
At Staples Center?
Yeah.
I'm going to guess, I don't know the year Staples was built. I'm going to guess 7, 8 years now, but before they played at the Great Western Forum.
And what happened to that place?
It's still there.
They didn't knock it down?
No, they actually
refurbished it?
Refurbished it. Yeah, renovated is what I was trying to say.
That's why I'm the talk show host and you're the producer.
Well, you didn't come up with renovated, though, did you? Anyway, they renovated it, and so now they're having... Good job. Now they have concerts, things there.
Okay, but have you been in a city where they demolished the stadium?
I have not. No.
Yeah, I've been in some of those, and even Tiger Stadium, the old stadium, they knocked down.
You ever seen a building implode?
Only on video, the Las Vegas buildings, like the Riviera.
Crazy, right?
You know, good people used to work there, by the way, at the Riviera. But I got to tell you, they collapsed just like the buildings did in 9/11.
I knew you were going to bring that up.
You know, they did. Okay, let's take some more calls. We've got Wayne in Tacoma, Washington. Welcome to the program. Hi, Wayne. Go ahead.
Good evening, Sir George. You mentioned to Cleopatra about being forced to take the mark of the beast. Well, you know, George, nobody's going to be forced to take the mark of the beast, just like God never forces anyone to trust Jesus Christ to be their own personal savior.
I don't know, Wayne. I don't trust these folks sometimes. I think they could try to force us to do anything they think they can get away with.
Well, kind of in a way, you're right, because this leader that's going to come on the scene is going to be so charismatic. You know, I think about my past and charismatic leaders. I'm a Protestant, but I used to love to watch Bishop Sheen, you know, because he was so charismatic and so knowledgeable about the Bible. And this guy that's going to come on the scene, I think the world is going to be in such a state. You've already mentioned the problems in St. Louis. In Chicago, you know, there's like 30 people killed at least every month.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Maybe it's every day. It's terrible. And it goes, it's like that throughout this nation. And it's not because of the gun laws. I mean,
no, you can't blame the guns.
It would be something else, right?
And they would find guns, believe me.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, you know, like I was saying, this guy that's coming on the scene is going to be so charismatic. He's just going to suck people in. And I believe times are going to be so bad, so evil, and he's going to ostensibly get rid of all the evil people, the born-again Christians. And these people that are going to come and accept him as their global leader, they're going to be given a choice to take this mark. And if they take this mark, they're going to be able to buy food and have rental housing.
And they're going to think they're okay.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But that's not going to be the case, because the Bible very clearly says that once you take the mark, there's a real heaven and there's a real heaven to gain and a real hell to shun. And once you take the mark, that's it, man.
I originally thought that our Social Security numbers, thought could have been the mark of the beast.
Yeah, a lot of people have said that and many other things, but no, it's going to be it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's a secret mark or a hidden mark or a chip. You know, you get that choice. Of course, if you don't take the mark, you immediately get your head chopped off.
That's a good
very
point.
Clear that this is going to be the method of execution for all the people that trust Christ.
Just for saying no.
Yeah, right, exactly. But, I mean, that's a good way to go, George. You go quick. I mean, it's not as bad as a lot of other methods.
The worst part about it is thinking about it.
Well, yeah, exactly, right. And, you know, maybe hearing people screaming, being beaten around you and stuff on their way to it. But, yeah, exactly. And, you know, you've talked about your beliefs in wanting to reincarnate in that. Well, you know, it's a good thought, but I trust what Bishop Sheen said. I trust what the gospel ministers say. I trust the Word of God, the Bible.
You remember Bishop Sheen?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You were a kid then.
Great. Yeah.
Yep.
He's one of the best. Yeah, and there's a lot of good I'm not going to say there's a lot of good Protestant ministers, because there's so many Protestant ministers, and I'm sure you're probably aware in the Catholic Church there are Catholic ministers that don't really teach the Bible anymore. They're all around the Bible, and yeah, people get a good sermon and that, and the police tickles their ears and the songs tickle their ears, but they're not learning the Word of God, and that's the most important thing about any church. It's not the label on the church that counts. It's not the label on the can that counts. It's what's inside the can that counts.
I've never known you to be this spiritual, Wayne.
Pardon me?
I've never known you to be this spiritual.
No, it's not being spiritual, George. It's having a personal relationship with God through Jesus Christ and, being born again. And that's one thing Jesus commanded. That's one of his commandments. You must be born again. And what does that word mean to you, George?
To be born again? Well, yeah. Some people think it's to be baptized.
Right.
To me, it's a cleansing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. When you trust God for your entire, eternity through Jesus Christ, by faith alone, through grace alone, in Christ alone. It's not of your good works, because really, the Bible says all of our good works are filthy rags, so it's nothing we can do to earn heaven. It's purely through God's grace and love and mercy that we can trust Christ for our eternity.
Well, there's a place for you, Wayno, in heaven, that's for sure. You know your business. Let's take a couple more quick calls and then a break. Ed in the state of Washington, welcome to the program. Hey, Ed, go ahead.
Hey, George. Hey.
Good to have you.
Those horses that have died at that Santa Anita racetrack.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems to me like somebody might be poisoning them somehow or something.
Yes, there's just something strange here. I can't believe they're all dying from leg injuries.
No, I mean, those horses are treated, they take care of them. And, my guess is like there's some drugs out there, unless you specifically test for them, they're not going to show up, So.
It's a sad story.
Self-driving cars and trucks, I don't see it happening. Driving is way more complicated than you really think it is.
How'd you like to be on a freeway in a snowy night and have a driverless truck coming from behind you?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Jeez.
There's so many variables in the situation you just described. I don't see how a computer can handle it.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, even though they've got computers set up to play chess and win and stuff like that, the driving, I think, takes a very special gift of awareness. And, everybody who drives a car, what you face every day when you hit the road. And you can imagine a driverless car trying to react that way at some of the strangest quick things you have to do, like instantaneously. No, it's not going to happen that way at all. Well, in a moment, we're going to be joined with Jeff Belanger as we talk about his work as a ghost hunter in places around the United States, including the White House, of all things. And by the way, this weekend, say a little prayer that this country gets out of the mess we're in right now. I've got to tell you, folks, this talk of impeachment and everything else, whether you believe it should happen or not, is not the issue right now. The issue is this is tearing our country apart, and it's got to stop, because if it doesn't, who knows what's going to happen in the long run. We've got a YouTube channel. It's free to subscribe. You go to a YouTube or coasttocoastam.com, click the YouTube icon. But if you're on YouTube, just put in Coast to Coast AM Official. You got to do that for it to pop up. And then just grab it and subscribe to that as well, if you would do that. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter so you can get instant messages that we send out all the time. And you can always email me at george@coasttocoastam.com, george@coasttocoastam.com. So when we come back in a moment, haunted places in the United States, yep, including the White House, we will be right back. There are many haunted places in the United States, including the White House. Researcher, ghost hunter, and Coast to Coast regular guest Jeff Belanger is an expert and has been to most of them. Listen in. And welcome back to Coast, George Dory with you. Jeff Belanger, of course, loves the unexplained, leads a very haunted life himself. He's been fascinated with the supernatural since 10 years old. And over the years, Jeff has interviewed hundreds of people about their experiences with an approach to the subject that makes the supernatural accessible to a wide audience. He is the writer-researcher for the Ghost Adventure series that's been on the Travel Channel. He hosts an online talk show, 30 Odd Minutes, and he's a noted author, including Who's Haunting the White House. Jeff, welcome back, my friend.
George, it's great to be back with you. How have you been?
I'm good. How about yourself? Are you traveling much?
Traveling all over the world, having an amazing time, and meeting all kinds of wonderful people. So life is very good.
Are we going to meet you at Contact in the Desert this year? You're going to be there?
No, no plans to be there. We'll have to meet up at some other stream.
Some other event. I think we ran into each other out there in Pennsylvania, didn't we?
The first time, I think, was the Queen Mary.
Yes.
And then Eastern State Penitentiary. So we've done jail time together.
Yes, we have.
Which is great.
But we got out on bail.
We did. They let us out. The fools.
That was a creepy place.
It really was, and when you walk into a place like that, you can't help but imagine what it must be like for those inmates that were facing that. Imagine walking in and saying, okay, this is going to be my home for 5 years.
That's right.
Maybe forever. And you feel that when you walk into a place like that.
Did they have Al Capone's cell there?
They did. That's the one.
I remember that.
All decked out. It was
weird. It was weird going in that cell knowing he was there 70, 80 years ago or whatever.
And that's the connection, isn't it? Right, you're standing where you know Capone stood. It's a fact. And you stand in those places, and you connect. And that, man, that's the heart of it. We just summed it all up right here in the first minute.
You got that right. Well, thanks for being on the show, Jeff.
Yeah, I love it. Thanks for having me back.
Now, you started at a very young age, but there was a very important story as a child that got you really going. Why don't you tell us that?
So I grew up in Connecticut, and this little small town, and when I was a kid, I remember hearing about this story of the White Lady of Easton. She was this ghostly figure that haunted Union Cemetery in Easton, Connecticut. It's right at the junction of Route 59 and 136. And when, you know, you're a kid and your parents take you out in the car on trips, sometimes you go by this cemetery. And I remember hearing the story, and even though I didn't see the ghost as a child, I would stare at that cemetery as it would go by, and then I'd look out the back window until it was safely out of sight, because I always remember thinking, maybe today's the day. Maybe today is when this story comes to life, because everyone knew about it. And I would say, like, well, if it's not real, how come everyone knows about it? How come everyone talks about it? Now, Ed and Lorraine Warren, who you may know from the Conjuring movies and all their books.
And Ed is no longer with us. Right?
No, he's not. He's passed on a few years ago. And they lived in the next town over, Monroe. And I knew them since I was 10 years old. And I'm sure that had some influence on my career choice. But they did a lot of research on this story. And Ed had this video that I saw at a young age that to this day I have not seen its equal. He set his camera up at night right outside that cemetery where you're allowed to park, and he's just letting it roll inside. And at some point, this white misty shape takes form, and it starts to move deliberately around some headstones. And it forms into an absolute human shape, and I would even go so far as to call it feminine, but I couldn't see features beyond that other than it looks curvy enough. And it's coming toward the camera, and then this black stuff kind of pulls it into the ground. The whole thing is 6-7 seconds, which is quite a long time, really, if you think about it. That's a long time.
It is a long time.
6-7 seconds, it goes into the ground, and then it's gone. And I looked at that, and I saw his video camera, and I said, you know, Ed, unless Spielberg helped you with that, I have no explanation. And of course, but more than anything, George, it's the stories. The stories of people seeing this wispy shape and then she's gone. Or, you know, they think she's a hitchhiker and they pull over to help this poor young woman on the side of the road and then she disappears.
And these are real stories, too.
They turn up again and again from, you know, off-duty fire department personnel to city cops and things like that. One story I even heard is that an off-duty fire department gentleman was riding in his pickup truck, hits this woman. He's panicked. He screeches to a halt, jumps out thinking, I just killed somebody. Oh, my gosh, who was that? And there's no one there, and there's a dent in the fender. And so these stories, man, they stick with you. And there's something about them that you're just so compelled. My brother-in-law, who was a complete skeptic and had to drive by this cemetery every single day for work, would tell me, I don't believe in any of this stuff, but I admit when I drive by at night, I always glance over. And I said, of course you do, because there's some piece of you deep inside that wonders, what if I saw her? What if tonight's the night? Why does everybody talk about this thing? And I've been trying to figure that out, George, pretty much the rest of my life so far.
Now, who determines what a legend is? Do you pick it, or is it already a legend?
It's you and I together. Just you and me, George.
We're the only ones.
It's just us. It's a group thing, and that's what I love about this is that, you know, Carl Jung, who did such great work, and I'm a great admirer of his work, the psychologist and psychoanalyst, he coined a term called the collective unconscious. And the collective unconscious refers to this thing that we just kind of know as a species. We're born knowing it, even if you don't have the words for it yet or otherwise. He called them archetypes, things like archetypes like the wise old man, the great mother, the shadow, these kinds of things that are just wired into our very DNA. And I feel like these are the truths that are in the very primal parts of who we are. So when we hear these stories that relate to things like life after death, or monsters, or even aliens and UFOs, it's speaking to something deep inside of us that says, okay, this is at least a possibility. Now, for some of us, it's very much a reality. It's been proven to the individual, even if not the collective. But there's some possibility in there, and that's why the story resonates. So the legend exists because it's a living, breathing thing. It cannot be argued. If I say Santa Claus to you right now, you've got a picture in your head.
Mm-hmm.
If I say Bigfoot, you've got a picture in your head. I don't have to say much more than that. You know where he lives, you know his general habits. Even if I can't produce a live one or a dead one, you have an understanding of what I'm talking about. Same when I say ghost or gray alien. You know what I'm talking about. And it's because there's been enough experience collectively and enough people have talked about it that we have to wonder, are all these people lying? Are all these people making this up together? Or is there something more to it? And then when you add in your own personal experience as you get older, when you see something you can't quite understand, suddenly those legends really come alive.
You recently came out with an audiobook, right? Who's Haunting the White House?
Did
you voice it?
I did. I narrated it.
That's a lot of work, by the way.
You have no idea. I'm sure you actually
I do.
Have an idea.
I do.
You have a very good idea. Never mind. I'm sorry. I forgot who I was talking to. But, this was my first project, and I called in a bunch of ringers. I called in some friends that host podcasts and radio shows and voice actors, and I had them do various voices of presidents and former first ladies and so on. So it turned into this whole production that was supposed to be so easy. You know, when you sit down and you think, okay, you just read into a microphone. How hard is it? it's very hard. But it was a wonderful project, and it turned into this this great production, and it just became available last week.
Well, that's great. There's no question the White House is haunted.
Yeah, no, and those
it goes
stories,
way back.
Yeah, I mean, those stories start turning up in the first decades of its existence, and I think it's one of those things that you have to remember too. The White House, everything is so well chronicled, and they've been doing that for forever since the beginning. There are people that are writing down everything that's happening in modern times. Of course, they're photographing, videotaping, and documenting every word that's said, every meeting, everything. And so when someone says, "Gee, I just saw a ghost," that makes it into the record somewhere. And again, been going on a long time. But my first, the first documented ghost story I found in the White House was Mary Todd Lincoln's letter to her sister, where she mentioned that she saw her son, Willie, who died of a typhoid-like disease. And it's heartbreaking, of course, because losing a child, there's nothing worse than that. That's the worst thing that can happen to a person. And she writes about seeing his ghost coming to her at night with his Uncle Alec, who also died as a child. And you can say that's just a distraught mother, and Mary Todd Lincoln historically, of course, may have, who knows where she was on various spectrums, but she wrote about it. And the ghost turns up again decades later. That's, to me, the smoking gun, when a military aide writes in his memoirs in the early 1900s that he's visiting the White House, and the maids and staff claim that it's haunted by the ghost of a little boy. Suddenly you say, okay, wait a minute. The only little boy to die there was Willie, and they didn't even give him a name. They just said little boy, and that connects us. It connects us back to the Lincolns. It connects us back to history, and that's what a ghost story does. Now, when I say story, don't think I mean it's just a story, but a story is part of what's going on.
You know, there's all kinds of hauntings that still continue at the White House where people are saying things. I know Bill Burns wrote a book with Joel Martin about the White House as well. What is it about that place?
I think when you go there, have you had the pleasure to go inside?
I was in the White House once at a luncheon when Ronald Reagan was the president.
There you go.
And it is very, very impressive.
It's powerful. And I went there as a child, but the second time I went there was when I was working on this book, and I got to go down and interview some of the staff. And when you stand in that north portico, that's the front part of the building with the triangular roof, when you stand there and you realize every single U.S. president stood where you are standing. I know Washington died before it was complete, but still he laid the cornerstone and
mm-hmm.
so on.
Mm-hmm.
You stand there and you feel that, just like we said before in Al Capone's cell. Wow, Capone was right here. Wow, Lincoln was right here. All of them, Kennedy, they were all right where you were standing. You feel the power of that building, and it's been through a lot. It's easy to forget it was burned to the ground in 1814 when the British sacked Washington, D.C. It's been completely rebuilt in the 1950s. It's so many decisions in that building have affected the whole world, not just this country. And there is inherent power in that, and you feel it. And I think if any place should be haunted, it's the White House, because if you don't understand history, if you don't connect with it, you are doomed to repeat the worst parts of it.
Jeff has also written a book called The Nightmare Encyclopedia. We'll talk about nightmares after the break at the half here. That's a great book by itself. I'm going to throw out a couple titles of stories and have you tell us what the story is in the time we've got left in this segment, Jeff.
Sure.
The Wild Man of Winstead, Connecticut. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so The Wild Man of Winstead is a story that emerged in Connecticut in August of 1895. And what's great about these is it's one thing if it's just folklore, you know, the story that sticks around and people still talk about it. But this one made all the papers. And I subscribe to various newspaper archive services, which is just wonderful for people like me. You can get lost in that kind of stuff. And I found one article and then another, from the Boston Globe to the Hartford Current and every paper in between, talking about this sighting. And it happened to in the town of Colebrook, Connecticut, which is the northern part of the state. And this gentleman was taking a walk to Colebrook, and he suddenly sees this wild man. He describes him as naked, hairy, 6 feet tall, and completely muscular. He said he wouldn't stand a chance in a physical battle with this creature, whatever it was. And then the creature was gone. But then that creature turns up again and again, and the sightings are all over. They form search parties to look for this. And then it makes the newspaper that someone says this is a ape that escaped the circus 3 years prior. That's the conclusion. It's an ape. Someone saw it, took a rifle shot at it, and it's an ape. But that only turns up once because people are so desperately trying to define this thing, this wild man. But that doesn't quite hold water. They couldn't find any record of an ape escaping and so on. It just fit neatly into some sort of explanation. And so the story sort of goes away. People kind of forget about it. It gets buried in their consciousness. But then it turns up again in the 1970s because there's some kids out parking and just 5 miles away from Colebrook, and they see this hairy creature again. Now, is it a Bigfoot creature, or is it just some reclusive person out in the woods that's let themselves go entirely and living as a wild man? We don't know, but in the 1970s, we don't expect that anymore. Maybe you could get away with that in the 1800s, but in mm-hmm. the 1970s, in these modern times, you're not even allowed to go off the grid anymore. So it's really curious, and suddenly when that surfaced, everyone connected it to those old stories from almost a century earlier. And if it's the same creature, well, it would have to be God knows how old. If it was able to, I mean, assuming it was some sort of adolescent in the 1895, by 1970, that's 75 years later. You know, I mean, it starts to ask some very big questions. What's out there? And that's what I love about this story, because we're talking about not just some creature that we may not know about, but it asks the bigger question. Is there a Bigfoot out there? Are there other animals and primates we don't know about, but they're so few in numbers and so elusive that they could still be out there among us? That's what the Wild Man of Connecticut begs us to ask. And because he was so well documented, because he made all the papers, because of sightings and even hunting the thing, we still talk about it to this day.
I never knew I had Martians in my garden, and I never knew there were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware, but now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living in, whatever century, your voice is always welcome here. See the light, and I also see a ghost, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast, 'cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast.
For Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Greg Bishop, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, Tim Badal, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.